And tonight we have Michael Lowenstern joining us for a performance. Michael, welcome.
They're with the groom.
Great, and we always start our evenings off with a conversation, such as we're having right now with the artist. I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and so welcome, Michael. I just want to kind of set the stage, as it were, and just kind of get a little background on what we're going to hear tonight. So in a certain respect, this is kind of a homecoming for you. At least it is in my view. I don't know how you're seeing it, but Michael, many of you may know, Michael used to live just right over there. If you look out the window, you can see Michael's former residence. So mm-hmm. So welcome back to Park Slope.
Thank you.
So it's good to have you here. So,
thank you.
So good. So tonight we're going to obviously hear a lot about a lot of your clarinet. But also a lot of technology. Maybe we should start there and just kind of talk a little bit about what you're doing with all this stuff. We have a lot of gizmos here.
Sure. So I, obviously I wasn't born into this kind of technology, but I have always had an interest in going all the way back to college and before college. I grew up with a Magnus chord organ. It was one of the organs where you would play with this hand, and then you'd have like the little buttons like F major,
sure.
F minor. I don't know if
sure.
you remember those. So I had that literally from the time that I was born, and stomp boxes and all of those sorts of things. But I've always been interested in this sort of one-man band kind of thing, mm-hmm. because for a lot of reasons, but it allows me to be totally portable and mobile, and it allows me to make music by myself with looping and with synthesizers and all that stuff like that. So, I could give you a guided tour of all this, but I don't know how boring that would be.
Well, we could just talk in the broad strokes. I mean, certainly we're centered around your bass clarinet, which you are, of course, a virtuoso and a well-known player of. But just in general, the flow of things. So you're recording yourself into the computer and
right.
and then.
Okay, so there are microphones attached to my instrument, and I start the computer off. I use a program that is kind of what I describe it. It's like Photoshop for music. You open up the program. It's called Max, M-A-X. And you get a blank screen, and you have to fill the screen up with little boxes that say things like, I'll simplify, but like record, play in, sound in, out, synthesizers. So you basically, it's a flow chart for sound.
Right.
So I record it, and then I can control what I, when I record and when I don't record with, foot pedals, because I got both hands busy. And sometimes it's automated, so that I don't have to think about hitting foot pedals, because sometimes I miss. And then at that point, the computer has recorded me and it starts playing it back and I play something on top of it. And that, in musical parlance these days, is called looping.
Right.
And that's, I guess, what I do.
That's basically what you do.
Yep.
Right. A lot of looping, and you use your voice a little bit and some
mm-hmm.
other instruments.
Yeah, I have other synthesized stuff, little toys that I've picked up along the way.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, good. So let's talk about the music a little bit. Now coming from what I understand, mostly a classical background. I mean, with your clarinet, when did you start playing clarinet? What is the basic trajectory of your clarinet odyssey, as it were? I mean, mostly grounded in a classical tradition, or is it kind of a mix?
Sure. Well, I started clarinet in fourth grade, and I had the clarinet that my mom played,
mm-hmm.
and it was the clarinet that my sister played,
wow.
and it was the clarinet that my other sister played, and then it was the clarinet that I played. And I don't think it had been repaired once throughout that whole time. So this is from 19... I still have... My mom gave me recently the original bill of sale for $200, paid in 10 installments by my grandfather, in like 1952. And so this instrument, it was wood. Everybody else's was plastic and shiny,
mm-hmm.
and mine was wood and not shiny. And it didn't make a sound at all. And, I figured I wanted to... This is a little roundabout way of telling
the
story.
Great.
So fourth grade goes on. I'm I suck, and so everyone else has these shiny clarinets, and I get my cork grease out, which is how we put the cork so the instrument holds together. But cork grease can make a wood instrument shiny,
mm-hmm.
So I took all this cork grease and I lubed up my instrument so that it was shiny. And then, of course, when it's full of that, it's like holding something like with mortar oil. And it was fifth grade, I was last chair. And then in sixth grade, I was very last chair. Like, I was last chair, damn it. And so in the middle of the sixth grade, my band director, Abby, and I've written a piece for him, sort of, because he comes back in my life story. He decided I was holding the band back. This is around December 1978. And so I was holding the band back, and he put me on bass clarinet where I would do less damage. But then I got their bass clarinet, which was shiny. And I just took to it. And so I abandoned the clarinet for a really long time. And then, you know, in high school and stuff like that, in college, I came back to clarinet.
Right.
So
it was a kind of a happy accident in that, it sounds like. That
oh,
you,
totally.
That you moved to the bass clarinet, and was it kind of instantaneous?
Instant.
That you just somehow you found your instrument, or that was it?
It was it. And it was, and ever since then, it's all it. I knew so, that that's what I was
going
to
So you
do.
Went from the fifth chair, I gather, to...
I think I was like 11th or 12th chair.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm just counting. I'm not counting.
Okay.
I'm not.
Well, but somewhere along the way, you became obviously very accomplished. You went to Eastman. You went to Stony Brook. And,
mm-hmm.
and for a long time, you were, and I gather to a certain extent still, you are a freelancer and playing in orchestras, chamber groups, and
I
so on.
I did do that. And I decided I will never forget it. In 2005, so my daughter Arielle was, I don't know, thank you, I'm driving back from the New Jersey Symphony, and I'm in the New Jersey Symphony is a traveling orchestra, so, you know, we play a concert in Newark, and then, yeah, Newark, and then, but not never Jersey City, we wouldn't slum that low. So, but then we would go to Trenton once a week, and so I would have to drive from Brooklyn all the way to Trenton, which is like, you know, 70 miles, and we would play Mahler or whatever, and then we would come, and I have to drive home every week. I would have to do this trip, and it was after the I don't know how manyth Mahler that I had done this, and I kind of, you know, I'm driving, and you're in this daze because you're on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I thought to myself, I'm like, you know, looking back to the end of my life, because I'm living the dream, I'm looking back to the end of my life thinking, looking back on myself that day. And I was gonna think to myself, like, would I regret playing more Mahler? And I thought, no, but I will always forget missing my kid grow up. And so I was literally, I was going to work, freelancing and advertising, and I would come home and throw my clothes and throw some food in my mouth and then drive down to Trenton and then come back and sleep and go and do that the next day. It just was just too much for me. So it was the next week I got an offer to full-time in advertising and I took it. And I resigned from Jersey Symphony, Chamber Music Society, Lincoln Center, and Orpheus in the same week.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And this was in 2005.
That was 2005. And I haven't freelanced since.
Right. Well, occasionally. I mean,
well, this isn't freelancing. This is what I love to do.
No, I mean, I see you. Well, I don't mean to argue the point.
No, let's argue about
but
it.
But I do see you playing once in a while.
Still. Once in a while.
Once in a while. Okay.
Yeah.
But that aside, I mean, you've cultivated this solo project. I gather this has grown in these years since this turning point in your life. I mean, I know you were doing some of this before, but it seems to me that it's become more active for you, or more, you've been composing more? And
well, once I ran away and joined The Office, I, you know, it gives you an opportunity to, you know, make a living in different ways, and you can refocus on the things that you
right.
care about. And this was, I've always wanted, like I said in the very beginning, this is always what I wanted to do. And so I was able to, you know, buy the gear I wanted and make it.
Right, well, and you're also, it seems to me, I mean, I'm just from what I've been following you on the internet, it seems that you keep a fairly active kind of pedagogical life as well, to a certain extent. Tell us a little bit about, so you want to be a bass clarinetist.
So I have a YouTube series. I have some students that come to my house, and, you know, whenever I would ask them, like, how many of you are musicians? How many of you studied music, I should say? Okay. All right, rock on. And, you know, when you had your teachers, they would say to you, like, okay, well, I need you to listen to this recording. And I would say that to my students, I need you to listen to this recording. And then they would go on YouTube and hear some other high schooler play it, like, pretty badly.
Right.
And, I mean, no judgment, except judgment. And so what I decided to do is that
Suck alert.
I decided to record the pieces that they were working on for them, right, so that they would have something to listen to. And then I realized, of course, there were a lot of other bass clarinet players because there's not a whole lot of it on YouTube. And so now I started this series, and it's a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. Well, you seem to still be very connected to the clarinet community at large. And you still doing occasionally some academic, I guess, residencies or visiting artists kind of things.
Yeah, I'll go to colleges because playing in New York, this accepted. What a great group of people! Holy moly! Playing in New York generally is pretty thankless.
Can be.
Yeah,
can
I mean, a lot of us who are musicians will remember the gigs where there's like one person there, and then they ask for their money back.
It's a big city. It's a big city. There's a lot to do. A lot of things going on every
Indeed.
Night.
Indeed. Yeah.
But so it's nice to get out of town once in a while, of course.
Right? Yeah, and when you're the only thing happening in town, in like Potsdam.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, so tell us a little bit about the pieces that we're going to hear tonight. I mean, we have some pieces, older pieces for you, some newer pieces. And, you know, overall, I mean, the character of them is, certainly a lot of popular influences, but also a lot of, there's some jazz and a whole potpourri of things.
I like music that, I never really liked listening to classical music growing up, and by and large, I still don't listen to much. So the music that I listen to influences me, and if it's, you know, and it's usually electronica, which is, I've been into that since forever, and so that has influenced a lot of what I do. So what the music that I write is not serious. It doesn't take itself seriously. Generally tonal. It's generally rhythmic. And funky, if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up in Chicago, I don't know what that has to do with anything, but I'm funky that way. So
it's a funky town.
Yeah, and so I, that the music that I do is all, it's all just, I try to write music that I want to listen to, and then I, working in advertising, I do a little focus grouping, and when audiences seem to yawn, I don't play that piece again. So, so I spend a lot of time sort of making sure that what I do is hopefully going to be fun. I have a couple new pieces, so yawn if you need to.
Yeah, we'll be watching. Yeah. We'll be watching you. So with this musical project of yours, and just with your whole musical career, you are someone in my view who is probably doing the most with the kind of the social media, the internet, the technology. You have a lot of stuff out there. You have the YouTube channels. You have a lot of recordings of your own. Your websites have always been very complex and full of features, and so it seems that you put a lot of time into that. I think I would recommend everybody check out Ear Spasm. What's the
etymology
of Ear Spasm, which in this case .com, but you used Ear Spasm more broadly.
It's just
the title of an album, for example.
No, the title of the album is Spasm.
Not Ear Spasm.
Yeah, no. But I don't know. It just evolved. I actually, the name of it before then was a little too long. Do you want to know what it was?
Yes.
It was
yes.
called Your Chocolates in My Peanut Butter. .com was too long.
Yes,
I'm not making that up,
that's
actually.
It's pretty long.
Yeah,
that's
it's still,
long.
I think I still have it registered. But
it's good. It's a good one. It's for something.
I could have sold it to
candy bars.
Yeah, I could have sold it to Mars for a lot.
So Ear Spasm, I mean, obviously it has an immediate image.
I think I've softened since it was originally.
So it's just something that you just came up with, just sort of.
Was
it focus grouped? Or?
No. Do you like it?
I do like it.
Okay, good.
I like your logo. Your logo is very effective.
Thank you.
And so I think it's great what you're doing, and I look forward to hearing the whole set.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us.
And I'll talk a little bit before each piece, so that because that's how I take a rest.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So that'll do it. So we'll just take 2 minutes to change the lighting here, and we'll get right into it. So
cool.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure.